prohibit the sign.
No. Let me now kind of outline what the OCA is considering for recommending to the board under phase two, which is broken out into three parts. This phase will specifically focus on the form and content of the auditor's report and what additional information users and investors need, and it's the best vehicle to provide that information. Part A will involve conducting research and on potential changes to the auditor's report and outreach. Phase two will involve holding a roundtable to discuss the information obtained in the research phase and to seek additional feedback. And then phase three will be to assess that feedback received and determine next steps. More specifically, as part of Part A, OCA will conduct research and outreach to the users and others to ascertain and identify the additional needs. Specifically, we plan to ascertain what information pertinent to the audit and activities of the auditor helps the users make a decision to invest in a company, and what information do users believe is necessary and required to be relayed to them by the auditor. We also plan to monitor, as we are currently, the development of other standard setters and regulators studying the topic, IWSB, ASB, IASCO, and others, and also monitor the FASB disclosure project framework as it relates to investor and user needs for enhanced disclosure. Once we have conducted our outreach and research, we would hold a roundtable to discuss the information obtained during the research phase and seek additional feedback. We would present an overview of the research conducted, facilitate a discussion regarding the additional user needs, and facilitate discussion regarding the potential solutions and challenges of additional user needs. After the roundtable, we would assess the feedback and determine next steps, which would include coming back to the SAG for further input as needed, and also present a staff recommendation to the board regarding a potential project relating to updating the form and content of the auditor's report. As it relates to the timing, OCA is recommending working on both projects simultaneously, as I just mentioned. After today's discussion, we would plan to assess the feedback we received here on phase one and phase two and consider recommending to the board under phase one proposed amendments to the interim standards. We also plan and have started conducting research and outreach as it relates to phase two on the potential project. Next year, in 2011, we plan to recommend to the board the proposed amendments to the interim standards, and as part of phase two, finish conducting the research, subsequently hold a roundtable, followed by assessing the feedback and determining a recommendation to the board regarding the potential project. So at this point, now that people have seen the full scale of, I guess, both approaches, I'll open it up for comments. And I know that Doug and Jeanette had their tent cards up, and I'll let you have the first say. Doug?
All I was going to say is if the intent of phase one to find those things that were non-controversial that you could push through very, very quickly, I think you found those as underwhelming as they might be. I mean, if that was the intent, I went back through my notes from the last meeting and my recollection of the discussion, I don't think you'll get a lot of pushback. In fact, if I think about your timetable now, I would say it's pretty conservative for what it would take to get those things approved, because I don't think there's a lot of controversy over those.
Jeanette?
I guess I was questioning the need for a phase one and a phase two, especially if you're going to do it concurrently. The whole process of putting something out for exposure and making adjustments and then doing it again on a more comprehensive basis takes a lot of your resources, could be confusing to the community. And what if in phase two you find that you want to strike some of what you did in phase one? So I would advise just to go to kind of merge it all together and just do it as one project.
We appreciate that comment. There was some debate, I think, on that subject at the last SAG meeting. As just, well, I guess I'll call it, some SAG members said, I think the term, there's some low-hanging fruit here in terms of just improving the existing audit report, and why don't we go ahead and try to do that while you take a longer view to the others. But if the view is the low-hanging fruit is of such low value, and that some of the commenters around here seem to be indicating that, that it sounds like the preference of the SAG members is really let's tackle the bigger, more important tougher issue and just build the lower-hanging fruit into that. So that's the message I heard from you, and maybe the same message I heard from Jim Cox and Hal.
Lynn Turner.
Marty, I still think the things you got in the phase one are good, and quite frankly, you already got the language all but done. So if you could just move ahead and get that out in short fashion, I think that would be helpful. But I am nervous about your phase two because you keep using the word potential, and which turns around and tells me you're not committed to it. And I'd feel a lot more comfortable if that word potential was scratched out of these slides after the Treasury Committee report and what you've heard in the CFA survey. I can't comprehend how it could be considered a potential project. I think it's absolutely something that has to be done, and it you know, the slides just tell me you're not committed to that yet, which is very troubling.
Well, let me try to comment to that. I think we're being cautious in some of our words here in terms of what the staff is doing, and since we have to make recommendations to the board, we can say there's a potential standard if the board approves it. So maybe that's the language that's catching your attention. I think that what we're laying out here is we definitely want to get to a solution to this. As Steve Harris said in his comments, this has been around, this question seems like forever, on how to deal with the user and investor needs. And we want to lay out a program here that conducts research to try to really understand what those needs are. We've heard a lot of those needs being we want more, but we really want to get more concrete information as to what that more is. And then once we get more research around that, to hold roundtables with investors, auditors, audit committee members, and others, which would be the third bullet here, is to develop potential solutions. It's been debated for a long time as to what do we do. Let's get to a real solution to this to try to get, you know, to get an answer and get a supplemental audit report if that's what's needed, and then get back to the SAG after that, and then for us to make a recommendation to the board. So potential is meant in that kind of regard. And it's in the 2011 time frame, because we think, obviously, it's been around for a long time and don't think we're going to solve what this additional audit report should look like in the next 6 months. And so we're looking at this as a, you know, 2010 into, well into 2011 project, and then with a recommendation to the board in 2011. Is that helpful?
Yeah, very much so.
Galen?
Yeah, what I'm hearing is a lot of angst about getting this out as soon as possible, and I think that would be consistent with the Treasury recommendations. Let me ask you one question, though, if you might get your input on that. Is this just strictly related to the audit report? What about interim reviews and interim review reporting? And am I throwing too much into the mix here? But it seems to me like that might be ripe for reconsideration in light of the AICPA just updated their standard on reviews. It's called SARS-19. Added an additional paragraph, talks about additional considerations there in the interim reviews. And at some point, isn't even a review report required instead of being optional? So it seems to me like interim reviews might be a topic to consider at some point.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I'm a proponent of reports being issued in connection with quarterly reviews. That's not in the jurisdiction of the PCAOB. That's an SEC matter as to whether the SEC requires reports in connection with quarterly reporting right now, and the SEC does not require reports in connection with interim reviews. But if the SEC were to require such reports, certainly you wouldn't see any objection from me, and I think we'd be looking at those interim reports. Brian, I don't know if you have any comment on that. No? But the main focus of the project, though, really, Galen, although I agree with your point about interim reporting, I think the main project here is to address what we've heard, what we clearly heard at the Investor Advisory Group, what we've heard from users elsewhere, and heard at the last discussion in the SAG meet around this, and that is the content of the audit report needs to change. It can be two reports, one on, so it's not confused, one the current pass-fail report so readers can clearly see do the financials present fairly or not and not confuse things, but additional information in some type of a report that helps get at the matters that Professor Cox referenced before. What were the critical estimates? What were the critical judgments? What were the most controversial areas of accounting policy and things of that nature that I think, Jim, you touched on? So I think that's the focus of the project.
Jeff Mahoney.
Thank you. I just wanted to second that. I think investors have spoken pretty clearly, as you just said, on this issue. They do want an improvement to the auditor's report. There are some differing views about what that improvement should be, but I personally, and I think many investors, would fall down along the lines of Professor Cox's explanation of what that information should be as a supplement to the auditor's report. I think that's where many of them be. I would not say that that's where all investors are, but I think many investors would converge around that solution. As we know, the Washington Post had a story the other day, as I'm sure you all read, where their view, one reporter's view, was that the PCAOB has been slow to act and weak-willed. And I'm hopeful that as part of this project, you can demonstrate to that reporter and to others that they were wrong on both counts.
Kiko Harvey.
Just a question, really. If you go out with this two-phase approach and you tell people that they're going to change some minor wording things, which are kind of all of a do-no-harm kind of change, are you also going to explain to them that there is a second phase coming and have some more description about it, or is that going to come kind of I realize these are all public and that people will probably get the word out, but a little more descriptive information about what that second phase may result in, because I'm kind of afraid of really driving the costs up of the audits, you know, without any real good reason. And so I think that, you know, dropping new language in, even as small as the language may seem, my sense is we'll have some sort of interpretation as it starts to bubble down through the firms that, you know, you need to do more now, even though it was already in the existing standards. So I'd like to see some sort of language about if you make the first changes and the language changes, that you don't expect these will have any additional cost considerations for audits, because reality is your standards already really required you to do this to begin with. Make sense?
Yeah, thanks for the comments. I think some of your questions we haven't fully thought through about what information we'd make available, but as you indicated, these are public meetings, and I'm sure with the press here and others, they'll at a minimum be aware of our detailed project that we're committed to on phase two that investors seem to be interested in, but what communication we ultimately make about that, I think we need to discuss with the board. Thanks.
Steve Harris.
Jeff, just to respond very briefly to what you brought up, this discussion at the SAG does not preclude the next meeting of the Investor Advisory Group. I mean, this is a top ticket priority for the Investor Advisory Group, as a number of the investors at this table have mentioned before. And so we will be working in tangent with the SAG and with the board. But I don't want anybody to be misled to think that, you know, the one group or the other is preempting. This issue is front and center, and I would anticipate that among the topics that will be brought up at the next Investor Advisory Group meeting, whenever it is, will be the auditor's report and the model and what they aggressively would like to seek as well. So I just want to leave you with that understanding.
Thank you, Steve. Lynn Turner.
Just to follow up on the last two sets of comments, as you do your research, I think the real question is to incorporate into your research whether or not investors are willing to pay the cost for whatever you're asking for in the way of the audit and the audit report. And I think as long as the owners of the business are willing to pay for it, then that should drive the answer. Are they willing to pay for what they want? And I think that's a reasonable thing to ask in the research, but I think that is really a question for the people who own the business, the investors.
Tom Linsmeyer.
Just one small nit for someone that has the job of writing words. One reaction I have under the language is the auditor is independent as required by applicable rules and regulations. It sounds like the only reason the auditor is independent is because of rules and regulations. And I don't know whether that's really the image that you want portrayed. The as required by seems, that would be the interpretation that I'd have. Consistent with, or is defined by, or is defined by and consistent with, something like that would seem to, you want to define what independence is, but it sounds like it's dragging and screaming is the independent.
Thanks, Tom. Noted.
Point noted.
Do people have any other thoughts on anything else that OCA should consider as it moves forward to trying to put together a proposal for the board to consider? You're tired from this morning's discussion?
I think they're tired of the discussion of the auditor's reporting model and saying, get on with it.
I got that. The weight is on my shoulders.
So thank you for that. I think your comments are helpful in terms of ensuring that we drive this through to a successful conclusion. It's as has been said, it's an issue that's been around for a while, and we want to get to a solution. So that's we're driven towards that. With that, I think we can turn to our next subject, and really our final topic of the day, which is an update on the Communications with Audit Committees project. And Dan Gelzer was going to make some introductory comments. Dan.
Okay. Thank you, Marty. As Marty's indicated, the next topic is the board's proposed standard on audit committee communications. And Jennifer Rand is going to summarize what we heard in the comments on the proposal that was published last March. But I'm just going to kind of briefly set the stage. As I said at the board meeting on this subject last March, it seems to me that one of the fundamental objectives of Sarbanes-Oxley is to strengthen the role of the audit committee by putting it at the center of the relationship between the public company and its auditor. The provisions of the Act that deal with the committee's oversight of the audit are kind of based on the idea that both the work of the audit committee and the work of the auditor can be strengthened to the extent that there's good communications between the two. But building on that objective, we did publish a proposal at the end of March that would try to enhance communication between auditor and audit committee, and also put more emphasis on it as a two-way process, not simply information transmitted from the auditor to the committee, but more of a dialogue between the two. We received 35 comments on that proposal, reflecting, I would say, a wide range of differing views. To me, at least two things came across. One is a number of comments suggested that we needed to do more homework, more outreach on this subject. Some thought we'd approach the subject too much from the perspective of the auditor and without a full appreciation of what audit committee members wanted and needed. Along the same lines, other comments can link this to the subject we were just talking about and pointed out that there could be similarities between the information that should be communicated to the audit committee and what investors would like to learn, or what additional information investors would like to learn coming out of the auditor's reporting model project. based on those comments, there were suggestions from a number of people that we needed more insight from investors, auditors, management, directors, others with an interest in the process before we go further with the project. The other point that stood out to me was the several comments, or many comments, emphasized that we needed to be careful not to turn auditor, audit committee communications into an exercise where the primary objective was to check a lot of boxes as to what had to be communicated. I think there was general agreement that the audit committee benefits from the auditor's insights into the strengths and weaknesses of the company's financial reporting, but that we needed to guard against overwhelming audit committees with a lot of information that wasn't necessarily useful to them or causing the auditor's communications to become more scripted and more of a compliance exercise. So with all those comments in mind, I think one thing that the board has decided is that it would be desirable to have a public roundtable on this topic to consider some of the things that we heard in the comment letters and other suggestions about auditor audit committee communications. We would like to hold that roundtable as soon as possible. Schedules being what they are, that probably means probably in September rather than next month, which is a difficult time to schedule meetings. We will probably reopen the comment period around the time of any roundtable, since there does seem to be a lot of interest in this subject, and it may not be possible to have everyone with an interest in speaking at the roundtable to actually be part of the program, but we do want to give everyone an opportunity to express any additional views that they may have. So with that little bit of introduction, Jennifer is going to be more specific about what we actually heard in the comments.
Thank you, Dan. I'd like to first provide an overview of who we heard from, who commented on the proposal. Dan mentioned 35 commenters sent in letters to us, and we are very grateful for the feedback. I think we felt that we had a wide range of feedback, and this shows you the outline. Certainly, firms and association of accountants provided, just if you look at total count, they provided the largest number overall of any particular group. But we also heard from audit committee members and associations, issuers and internal auditors, investor representatives, and a couple others. And we are very pleased with the different type of feedback we heard, and we saw some consistent themes among some of them, but we also saw some different views. So with that, I'd like to provide you with an overview of what commenters said. And these are the types of issues that, as we put together what the roundtable topics will be, the types of issues that we'll be seeking additional feedback on, as well as we hope when we do officially reopen the comment period, we'll get additional comments on these and certainly if there's any other issues. Overall, what came clear to us is there certainly was support for a revised standard. People recognize the importance of audit committee communications, also recognize the current standard and the board's interim standards is directed that it isn't required that the auditor establish this understanding, at least with the engagement letter with the audit committee, and thought improvements could be made really to align the board's existing standards, board standards, with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act requirements. So there was overwhelming support for the standard, but with that, like with any of our proposals, there's areas, you know, for suggested improvement. So I'd like to go through different recommendations that commenters provided to us. First, as Dan mentioned, an overwhelming theme that really came from not just one particular group. Certainly audit committee members had this view, but also the Center for Audit Quality encouraged additional outreach about what issues audit committee members are interested in. There was some view that the requirements in this proposed standard really geared toward maybe what auditors would like to say as to audit committee members as a result of the audit, but there may be other issues, additional things, and so commenters really encouraged us to develop a standard that would be meaningful to audit committee members and their oversight, and that could include some additional things, and encouraged us for that additional feedback, which is why Dan mentioned the roundtable and an additional comment is something we're pursuing. Another point was it encouraged us to clarify the process related to the evaluation of two-way communication between the auditor and the audit committee. Certainly, it was recognized that there is the importance of effective two-way communication between the auditor and the audit committee. And in previous discussions with the SAG, when we've talked about this topic, that's come up as being very important. But the comment that came through in comments that came through in this regard is, well, how do you go about really objectively evaluating those, you know, whether or not the two-way communications were effective? What should the criteria be? And also another comment was the requirement, the proposed requirements we had in the standard were not helping to promote effective two-way communications. So really just comments on better ways to articulate that, better requirements, better direction on what we're trying to achieve there. Another area relates to the audit engagement letter. So that's the letter that the auditor provides to the audit committee and the services to be provided in connection with the audit. And in that, in the proposed standard, it includes different required elements. One is disclosing the auditor's responsibilities and also management's responsibilities. And several commenters suggested to us that the audit committee's responsibility should also be included in that letter. So we had several different commenters express that view. Just moving to the next slide. Additional themes, considering management's communications to the audit committee to avoid repeating certain requirements. We have several requirements in the proposed standard really around the area, most particularly about accounting estimates. And we had language which we intended that the auditors would not be duplicative of management's communications. We certainly recognized in developing the proposed standard that management would be communicating certain matters to the audit committee, but nonetheless, we thought the auditors should evaluate that, perhaps not duplicate things that they didn't see if it was necessary. But there seemed to be confusion around how we articulated that and thought we could better describe what the auditor should do in considering management's communication so that it's not completely duplicative. There was also a suggestion about clarifying which consultations outside the audit engagement should be communicated. Several commenters talked about not really clear on where the lines were as far as what constitutes a consultation. You know, if the engagement team consults with someone else, for example, they may want to just call someone to get clarification on an accounting standard or how that's applied. Would that be considered? Would they need to communicate that? Kind of, you know, water cooler conversation, national office, kind of, excuse me, what is that, what is in the scope of that? And also some were concerned that if it was just too broad, it could have the unintended consequence of discouraging such consultations, which certainly would not be beneficial. Moving on to the next slide, we had mixed views in certain areas. One was regarding whether all communication should be in writing. And this is an area that we've sought the SAG's feedback, and we heard mixed views regarding SAG members about permitting flexibility, permitting some communications be made orally, others in writing. Other SAG members thought that all should be in writing. That same view seemed to persist in the comment letters that we received. So we were not able to reach a consensus view on that, and people brought up, you know, very good reasons for which side, you know, that they were on, whether or not there should be all in writing or whether flexibility. Another area of mixed views is whether all corrected misstatements, including those detected by management, should be communicated to the audit committee by the auditor. Many had concerns that as management is going through the financial reporting close process, that, you know, certainly their system of internal controls would identify areas of misstatement, and part of the controls of the company system would identify those and correct them. So there was some concern about how much, you know, bringing all these adjustments in, is that going to have a negative, you know, just duplication, not necessary. It's part of the company's internal control system. And so there were views on whether or not that was an appropriate communication by the auditor. And then finally, and Dan mentioned this too, there were some concerns or different views that the proposed requirement in the standard could just create this check-the-box mentality, that it appeared to some that what was in our proposed standard was a lengthy list of required communications, that perhaps those required communications were not getting to the heart of issues, and again, kind of going back to the first point, what was truly important to the audit committee in connection with their oversight of the audit and the financial reporting process. And so just encouraged us to kind of revisit what's required so that it's not too many and that they are appropriate. So with that, that's an overview of the significant comments that came through, and thank everyone here on the webcast for providing comments on that. We're certainly going to continue exploring this issue. It's an important issue, and we recognize the importance of hearing from audit committee members and others and continuing to debate this and get feedback before we recommend to the board that they finalize the standard. So with that, I'll open up the floor if there's any comments on going through the comments. Doug Anderson?
I just had a question. So is the expectation that after the roundtable you come out with another exposure draft, or do you not know at this point?
In my view, and I see Marty is about to jump. In my view, that might be premature. I think it depends on, we're certainly open to the feedback, and I'd personally be reluctant to prejudge the outcome. So a lot of, the commenters did encourage us for additional feedback, and we plan to do that in two parts, the roundtable and reopening the comment period. And so I don't want to prejudge what may come out of that.
I think without getting in trouble with Marty and Jennifer, I think it's fair to say that if we make significant changes in the proposal, then we will re-expose it. And I guess you can draw your own conclusions from what you've heard about whether that's likely or not.
Thanks, Dan. Paul Sobel?
It seems obvious that a key constituent for this roundtable will be audit committee representation. Have you given some thought to how you're going to make sure you have sufficient representation, whether it's there's a few different audit committee organizations, or would it be directly with audit committee members, and would you pull the plug on it if you don't think you have representation or sufficient audit committee representation?
We have, but that has been a significant consideration for us. Given the composition, we do want to have a good number of representatives from audit committees, and also we heard from constituent groups of audit committees, so we're interested in that as well. Broad feedback, the types of entity, who they may be audited by, different industries. So we are looking at, because the audit committee members or views that were provided weren't necessarily always unanimous. They had different views, too, about what may be important to them in connection with the oversight of the company. So we are very much interested in that. That's a key driver in the roundtable composition.
Yeah, I'll echo Jennifer's point there. We would expect to have significant representation of audit committee members and a diverse group of audit committee members. And seeking such groups such as the NACD to recommend, for instance, certain audit committee members to attend. So we'll be doing some outreach to get the right constituency at the round table. Damon, is your card? Yes.
I commend you on that, what you just said in terms of reaching out to a diverse and sort of engaged group of audit committee members. But I think it's probably important to keep in mind here that the interaction between auditors and audit committees is they are all agents, meaning that you wouldn't want to get into a situation where the mutual desire not to be to A, not inform, and B, not to be informed is viewed as the last word on a matter.
I think we've heard mixed views on that, and that's a good point, that there are some audit committee members that express, I don't need to get all this information, I don't need to hear all of this, and there are other audit committee members who say, I can't get enough. So that's our standard is somewhere between there, I guess.
Well, perhaps I express myself in too cryptic a way. I mean, I think that the point here, I think, is that the board, in looking at a standard here, needs to be mindful that, I mean, there are some situations where you, in public policymaking, where you have essentially two constituents and there isn't much else to the story, right? And then you take their views into account and try to figure out a fair way of balancing them. In this matter, there are, although you are prescribing a standard for communications between two parties, it's the broader investor and public interest that is being served by this communication, and that's what the board ought to keep in mind.
One criticism we got about the proposal was that some communication got back to us that this is terrible. Audit committee meetings are going to go from 30 minutes to 3 hours. We wanted to know which companies had the 30-minute audit committee meetings. Barbara pointed out that, yes, the roundtable would include not just audit committee members and auditors, but a broad constituency, including, clearly, investor groups as well. Yeah, absolutely. Well, if there are no further comments on that, I think we've worked our way through the agenda. I think everybody got a little bit tired out at the session on FASB and IASB. But then we had the main event in the morning as well. So just in terms of, I'd be glad to take any comments anybody else has on any topic that we've discussed or other emerging concerns that you have that we should be thinking about. I certainly take into account some comments that were made of, given how many important things we have on our agenda, make sure that if there's some minor things that we talked about, maybe put them to the bottom of our agenda because there's clearly some big ones. And good point there. With respect to broker-dealers, the point was made, take advantage of what's out there already, work with the SEC, FINRA, expert panels, et cetera, understand the risks with respect to customer assets that are not on the balance sheet, they're not off the balance sheet, but it's trillions of dollars, and ensure that our standards are robust in that area and move expeditiously. So that's going to be an important matter for us. I have added to our staff, and some new additional people are coming on. The FASB projects will be important to us, and clearly that discussion emphasized the need for PCAOB to stay very involved in those to understand the auditability issues. Issues came up about questions of diversity in practice that could occur, judgment framework, pressure on closing, and therefore implicit implications on audit quality. So these matters will have tremendous amount of our attention going forward with us working closely with FASB to talk and understand and address auditability issues. All right. Damon?
I mean, you invited sort of into the weeds. I'd like to go up one level of generality. I've had to be in and out today, so perhaps this has already been mentioned, but I mean, I think that, you know, the board has labored under a certain amount of uncertainty for a long time in terms of litigation and the like, and that is sort of over. And I've had a great deal of sympathy, and I think many of us around this table have, for the ambiguous position that put the board in. I think it's clear that you are, the staff is, and your team in particular, Marty, are working very hard at this stage to sort of take up a lot of business that perhaps in a different world might have been taken up earlier. And I just wanted to commend you for that and express my appreciation and appreciation of the people I represent, for all the work you're doing. And in particular, I note for your responsiveness to our body, I'd take one example. We've had some discussions here about concerns around audits of international firms and the like, and there was recently an announcement, I think, representing the kind of consensus view here about some things that maybe ought to be done in terms of advising investors about risks associated with some audit practices there. I think it's indicative of sort of how responsive you've been to this body, and I just want to say how pleased I am, how much I appreciate it.
Damon, I appreciate the comment very much, and we'll continue to try to be so. With that, I guess brings to closure today's meeting. Unless anybody has any further comments or further business? John White.
Just one other thought that occurred to me. We were talking about the 500 firms that do the non-public broker-dealer audits. I don't think any of them are represented on the SAG, and maybe when you're thinking about new members.
There are 500 new firms that have registered because they didn't otherwise audit issuers. Certainly the firms that are around this table, I think in each case probably audit some non-public broker-dealers. So there are representatives around the table who audit non-public broker-dealers right now, but there are 500 new firms registering who previously had not audited any issuers and therefore weren't. But we take your point that when we're looking for new members, maybe somebody out of that constituency might be appropriate as well. Thank you.
Well, one other point, I mean, one of the things the board probably going to want to discuss is whether to have a rather aggressive outreach to these firms, perhaps as a parallel, thinking about our outreach to the smaller issuers, smaller auditors, or more specifically firms that audit smaller issuers, that series that was 6 or 8 meetings a year. So this is something we'll have to discuss at an appropriate time.
There's nothing else, and meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.